It's 1:15 here on Giant 90.9. That can only mean one thing. Your host, Jackson White, is alongside Owen Pulley in HD1 Studios, and it's time for the Sports Spotlight!
Gotta add the fireworks in.
That's right. That's right.
And welcome to the Sports Spotlight Draft Edition.
Draft Edition.
As the NFL Draft is tonight, I'm your host, Jackson White, here with John Easter. Owen Pulley is inactive.
He's on assignment.
Yeah, he's on assignment.
He's been, what do they say? I can't think of what the term is in baseball. Designated for assignment or something.
I don't know. We do not. Yeah, Owen is not here.
He's not here. So we're here.
So we are here, and we're going to do the show. But the NFL draft is tonight. And going on our Twitter, there's been a lot of tweets have been tweeted out from that account.
Oh, yeah?
You can follow us, the_spotlight. And, it's a pretty good Twitter account. And
if you do say so yourself.
Yeah. The Colts. That's just the first thing we're going to talk about. Do not hold a draft pick tonight.
But I don't think Chris Ballard will probably be, at home with his feet up waiting until tomorrow.
I think he is going to field things, obviously. I think we all know that's what Chris Ballard does. Will he make a move into the first round? I do not know. But I have our picks right in front of me now. So the Colts have a total of 7 picks in this upcoming NFL draft this next
Just none tonight. Of them today.
None of them today, currently. So they have the 42nd pick in the second round, the 73rd pick in the third round, the 122nd overall pick in the fourth round, the 179th overall pick in the fifth round, the 216th pick in the sixth round, and the 239th overall pick in the seventh round. The Colts do not have their first-round pick, obviously, because of the trade last season with the quarterback formerly for the Philadelphia Eagles and now formerly for the Indianapolis Colts, Carson Wentz. So the Colts, seven picks in this upcoming
seven
draft.
Seven first-round picks for the Colts.
Yeah, that's something.
That would be interesting.
Eagles almost had 7 first-round picks at one point this year.
Right.
Because they are wheeling and dealing. But the Colts, no first-round picks, but they have positions of need. And I think everyone knows that. We ran a poll on our Twitter, the_spotlight. Give us a follow. We asked Colts fans,
Did you hear that you need to follow the _spotlight?
Yeah, I think you should.
Sorry.
But we ran a poll a couple days ago, and it got around, 45 votes. And I put a little bit of a poll saying, what do the Colts need in this upcoming NFL draft? I put receiver, offensive line.
Okay.
Let me just go see. My brain is okay. So I put receiver,
yep.
Tight end,
yep.
Left tackle, or other. So 47 votes, by the way. So 84% of the vote said
84% of the 47 votes
said receiver.
They're right. That's the right answer.
So tight end got 0%.
Really?
Yeah, I think someone would say that.
Right.
Colts tight end department is weak. 16% left tackle. And then other was not selected. So people are
zero and zero. That's pretty much split between offensive line help and offensive tackle and also the wide receiver position.
So 84% of the people that voted on this poll are saying, go get a receiver.
Yeah.
And I had to agree full heartedly.
Me too.
Because. So the Colts, as we look at it, have obviously 1 second-round selection this year and a third-round selection as well. And Chris Ballard kind of has a good resume when it comes to drafting in the second round. So the Colts have had a few selections in the second round since he became a general manager back in 2017. His first pick in the second round was Quincy Wilson in 2017, which didn't really pan out.
That one didn't.
That was not a hit.
That one didn't work.
But in 2018, possibly the greatest second round ever by a GM, the Colts drafted Darius Leonard,
yep.
Braden Smith, Kamoko Touré, and Tyquan Lewis, all in the second round. 4 second round picks in 2018 for the Colts. And, of course, we know what happened that season. They went on to win a playoff game with Andrew Luck under him. So,
when did they draft John Easter?
Oh, that was in 1950.
Thanks, then, Jackson.
And then in 2019, they also had 3 second-round picks. They drafted Ben Begu, Paris
Banigou,
Campbell,
Banigou,
and then Arak Yassin.
Yep.
So practically, Arak Yassin is Ngakoue.
Brock is rocked.
Out of Indy.
Yes.
And then 2020, another phenomenal second-round year for the Colts. They drafted best running back in the league, Jonathan Taylor.
Derrick Henry fans would yell and scream, but sorry, it's true.
And then
100% true.
Michael Pittman Jr.
Who
is a 1,000-yard receiver of
right.
last season. And then last year, Deyu Okumadiyo, whatever.
Deyu out of big, I have to look at it.
Yeah, but
it's Deyu.
He was injured most of last season, so we don't really know. But, I mean, you could look at that list, and you just look at it right now. I mean, I'm looking at least 3 All-Pros.
Right.
And that's just in the second round. And, he's drafted phenomenally well. Obviously, in 2018, he also drafted if he continues on this projectively, pathway, Quentin Nelson's going to be a Hall of Famer.
Right.
Same with Darius Leonard.
Big cute.
That was in 2018 as well. So
Darius Leonard, I don't know if he's going to – I don't know.
I mean, he's been an All-Pro or not. He's been an All-Pro.
Hall of Famer? That's
two of his he's been a Hall of Famer. Not Hall of Famer. He's been an All-Pro every year of his career except his rookie year.
It's tough for linebackers and for I don't know. Colts need some rings before we talk.
If he keeps it up with getting an All-Pro every year, I mean, you can't deny it. I mean, statistically, he's number
one. Still too early.
I mean, of course.
Bob Sanders is a great example of a guy.
I mean, if he retired right now, he wouldn't make it in. Same
right.
with Big Q.
Right.
But I'm just saying if they continue on the pace they're going right now, they most likely have.
Okay.
Same with Jonathan Taylor.
Okay.
But Jonathan Taylor's only been in the league for 3 years.
I mean, third year. So, you know, Davis had a few good years in Denver. And
you can't say they're going to make it now, but if they
continue on the path. I get what you're saying now.
Yeah. But a lot of good second rounders in and the Colts have one as well, and that's going to be their first selection if a trade is not made. Obviously, could the Colts make a move for Deebo Samuel? I don't know, with not a first round pick not happening right now, so we will have to see. But yeah, I don't know. So that's going to be interesting to say the least. But the Colts, I think we know what they need at this current moment. They need a receiver, they need left tackle, they need tight end, and they need defensively. I don't even know what their 7 draft picks this season, this upcoming NFL draft, which is this weekend, all the Thursday through Saturday, if they even take a defensive player. Obviously, I would assume they're going to, but I would not be surprised in any imagine they do not take a single defensive player. Because their defense, you look at it, and I mean, obviously you like some cornerback depth. They're still a little bit iffy there. Obviously you have your starters. You have Kenny Moore and Gilmore. Isaiah Rodgers came on at the end of this last season as well. But you'd probably like someone to add on to that depth. Safety, you got some depth in McLeod in the offseason. You've got another couple special team guys. Obviously Julian Blackman coming back as well. Willis as the other safety. You might want to get some depth there, but you're not going to get high-quality players where you're picking. I mean, this is going to be an offensive-sided-minded draft for the Indianapolis Colts, at least from my impression. Obviously, I'm not in the Colts war room. I'm not drafting the team. Maybe the Colts feel like there's a defensive player that can help them win now, because that is obviously what they're trying to do with Matt Ryan under helm. But looking at it, you got 7 picks. You have 2 fifth rounders. You have a second, a third, and a fourth, and a seventh. Looking at it, I think the Colts are going to go more offensive oriented in this draft. And the real question is, when are they going to draft these players? Do you take a receiver 42nd overall, or is that receiver still solid, still really good, but will he be there at 73? That's the question you have to ask yourself. Because once you get around into the second round, you're asking yourself, usually you start to kind of pick best available at times. Obviously, early second round, the Colts, 42nd pick in the, I mean, that's the 10th overall selection in the second round. Okay, let's just, if we're going on that. And that's where you want to be. I mean, they moved up from 47 to 42 in the Carson Wentz trade earlier in the offseason. But if the if all the good receivers, like your A top tier receivers, are gone, and then you're back now to your B tier receivers, and if that B tier receiver is going to be there at 73, what do you do? Do you draft a left tackle? Do you draft a tight end that you don't think is going to be there? You just draft what you think will best help your team at that overall position. And I think that's what we're going to do. Obviously, the Colts, they don't fold under pressure, especially when it comes to drafting one of the best drafting teams, really, since Chris Ballard was hired. And I would say the best since 2018. But this is it's a big night. Will the Colts make a move? That's to be determined. But we'll have to see. We will have to see. It's definitely going to be interesting, this NFL draft. But over the past couple days, I know I mentioned I was going to make a mock draft, and I did do that. I made a mock draft this morning, and I posted it to the Sports Spotlight Twitter. Follow us, the S_Spotlight. And I made this mock draft earlier, and I'm just going to go through it and kind of explain why I think players will go in the current order. So I'm only going to go to pick 20, because if I went all the 32, it'd probably take a while. And I only made it to 20. And then I kind of got a little bit, there was some few players. So I might do an all full first rounder, and I might post that later to the Twitter before the draft. So we will see. But I'm going to start with the first overall pick in the NFL draft, a team that beat the Colts to round out the season so the Colts don't make it into the playoffs. The Jacksonville Jaguars get the number one pick in the draft, and I have them taking Trayvon Walker, the Georgia defensive lineman. Aiden Hutchinson, another guy who could go there. I think it's a toss-up as of right now. I'm going to go Walker to Jacksonville. That's what I've been seeing online. I think Walker will be the number one pick. And obviously, Hutchinson, he's the second-best player. I would say, in all reality, he could be the best player in this draft. I have him going to the Detroit Lions with the second pick in the NFL draft. Hutchinson, he's from up there. He's from the Michigan area. He went to Michigan, and he was a Lions fan. I mean, the stars align. I think he's going to be a Detroit Lion. The third pick in the NFL draft, the Houston Texans. The Texans, I've looked at many mock drafts, and I'm going to agree with them. I have them taking Ike Ikewodu. That's a name right there. I'm probably saying it really wrong. But the NC State offensive tackle to protect Davis Mills. Obviously, people are like, well, they need a quarterback. I think they're going to rock with Davis Mills. That's what it seems, because Baker Mayfield was on the board to trade for in the Deshaun Watson trade, and they chose not to go after Baker. So I would assume that means that they are going to try to protect Davis Mills, and he was so mad. They were getting right to him, to say the least. So, yeah, the third overall pick, Houston taking an offensive tackle. And the fourth pick in the draft, the New York Jets, I have them taking Sauce Gardner from Cincinnati, the cornerback, one of the best cornerbacks in the draft and one of the best cornerback prospects in all reality ever. His statistics from last season are just stand out, as Cincinnati was one of those teams that made it into the college playoff. Obviously, they didn't win at all, but Cincinnati, a really good team this season, and that's all because Gardner really played well. It depends who falls here. I think Gardner is the fourth best player in this draft. If Hutchinson somehow gets there, I think they're going to take him. They need some pass rush, the Jets do. But I think Gardner will help that team out in their secondary, which is lacking. So we will have to see there. Going to the fifth pick, two straight New York teams, the New York Giants. I had them taking Charles Cross, the Mississippi State offensive tackle. And everything I've seen online has shown that Cross is going to be a New York Giant. And the Giants, obviously, they have their offensive line is weak. That's been a really weak point for them the last couple seasons. They're trying to, it looks like they're going to roll with Daniel Jones for another season. So if you want to protect Daniel Jones, you have to get an offensive line. And I think they're going to draft Charles Cross. Going to the sixth pick now, Evan Neal, the Alabama offensive tackle. The Panthers, and really people question, because the Panthers obviously kind of have the question mark at quarterback. Obviously, they have Sam Darnold, and other players available that have been linked to them, Jimmy Garoppolo, Baker Mayfield. Three okay quarterbacks. I think Mayfield is in a league of his own when it comes to those three. Garoppolo, a proven winner in this league, also could be on the market. But I think that the Panthers might take a quarterback here. I could see in all reality. I mean, I would not be surprised. I don't know. I mean, I would not be surprised if they take Malik Willis. Like, I could see it. Do I think it's going to happen? No. Kenny Pickett, another name that's been tossed around there at six for the Panthers. But I just think that's a little bit of a reach. I don't think that Pickett is worth a top 10 pick in this draft. And in all reality, Willis, I think he is the best quarterback in this draft. And we'll get to him in just a few seconds. But the 7 overall pick, the Giants pick once again. And I'm going to have them taking Derek Stingley Jr., the LSU cornerback. There's been rumors that James Blackberry is on the trade market and going to be moved. So they need a guy to fill his role, and I think they're going to take Stingley out of LSU. And then the 8th pick in the draft, a team that formerly had Matt Ryan. I have Matt Ryan, obviously. He's now in Indianapolis. Now the Falcons taking Malik Willis, the first quarterback off the board at number 8, the Liberty quarterback last season. Willis really had a standout pro day, really good combine as well. And I think Willis is the best quarterback in this draft, at least from this offseason. If you asked me probably up in January, I would have said it would have been Pickett. But Willis has really came to be a standalone Stanpark quarterback. And I have him going to 8 to the Falcons. Number 9, I have the Seahawks. This was formerly the Broncos, but in the Russell Wilson trade, it's now Seattle. And I have him taking Kayvon Thibodeaux. Really don't know if I can say that name correctly. But the Oregon edge, he's a left end. He was played for Oregon last season. He's a really good player. He's a guy who, in all reality, he can go all the way to 3 to 9. I don't think he gets past Seattle. Seattle needs someone to get the quarterback. I could also see them possibly taking a quarterback, but I think they just want to be bad next year and draft a guy in next year's draft, which is going to be a big draft for quarterbacks. But he's a guy who could really, I could see moving around in this upcoming draft. And I think Seattle, if he's there, they might pick him up. So the 10th pick in the draft originally would be the New York Jets. But I have a feeling before the draft begins, Deebo Samuel is going to get traded to the New York Jets for this 10th pick and more. So I have a mock trade in my mock draft this year. I'm at the 49ers selecting Garrett Wilson, the Ohio State receiver. And you might think, well, why can't the Jets just take him? I think they want Samuel because he's a proven star in this league. He's not going to be cheap either, but there's no way he plays for the Niners next year in Samuel. And if I think this is the best pick and best selection you're going to get for him. And then the 49ers, you've got to replace your guy, and I think they're going to replace him with Garrett Wilson if this trade happens. The 11th pick, the Commanders. I have them taking Drake London out of USC, the receiver, and the Commanders now with Carson Wentz at the helm. He needs receivers besides Terry McLaurin. And with London, he might get it. And then you have the 12th pick with the Vikings. I'm going to have them taking the Notre Dame safety, Kyle Hamilton. The Vikings have lacked in the secondary at times last season, and I think the Notre Dame safety, Hamilton, is going to come in and help immediately and probably start for that team right next to the All-Pro next to him, whose name is just leaving my mind. But that's a guy who I could see him falling back to probably 22, Hamilton. But he could go as early as, in all reality, 7. I mean, it's just, there's not really set in stone picks, I think, in this draft this year. And I think we will have to see. But going to 13 now, the Houston Texans. I have them taking Jermaine Johnson, the Florida State left end. And Houston, they have holes practically everywhere, you could say. And earlier in the draft, they have 2. I have them taking, obviously, the offensive tackle. So they go the other line of the other side of the line and take Jermaine Johnson under Florida State. The 14th pick, the Baltimore Ravens. I have them taking Chris Olave, the Ohio State receiver. And obviously, the Ravens, a team that has been destined to have a receiver come to them, and it seems like forever. They're going after every free agent. They just can't get a guy in their room. And I think they're going to draft a guy with the 14th pick in tonight's draft. The 15th pick, the Philadelphia Eagles. Jordan Davis, the Georgia defensive tackle. The Eagles obviously struggled at times to get to the quarterback. I think Jordan Davis comes in and starts right next to their starting D tackle. I forget his name. His name is leaving me. But I think that guy, Jordan Davis, is going to come in and start immediately out of Georgia. Going to 16 now, which would originally have been the Indianapolis Colts pick if it was not traded to the Philadelphia Eagles, and which got traded to the New Orleans Saints. But I have them taking Trevor Penning, the Northern Iowa offensive tackle. The Saints, a team that really struggled protecting the quarterback last year, as we saw Jameis Winston went down with an injury. Obviously, it wasn't because of the protection that gave up. Jameis Winston rolled left and just kind of fell awkwardly. But Penning is going to come in and I would say start. They also lost Armstead, who ended up going to the Miami Dolphins. So I think he's going to come in and fill that Armstead type role. Then on the 17th pick, the Chargers. Keyon Green, I have the Texas A&M linebacker. The Chargers, a team that is really, really close. I think they're getting right on that edge to becoming a really competitive team. And with another really good linebacker, I think that could help them boost into the playoffs next season. The 18th pick, the Houston Texans. Once again, this is the Browns pick. So this would have originally been the Browns. But I'm going to have the Texans taking Trent McDuffel, the Washington quarterback, the cornerback, I should say. The Texans, obviously, a team that you could say lacks at a lot of positions, and I think that would really help them in the future. But welcome back, John East.
Hello.
Yeah,
sorry, so we had some business to attend to there.
But he's back, so yeah. And the 19th pick, the Saints. Once again, I'm going to have them taking Jameson Williamson, the Alabama receiver of the Saints. Obviously, Michael Thomas did not play last year. Hopefully, he'll be back this season. But there's still a team that needs a receiver, and I'm going to have them taking Jameson Williams with this 19th pick. And then the 20th pick, the final pick in my mock draft as of right now. I'll probably go through and do another one and edit it and go all the way to the first round later. But I have them taking Steelers quarterback Kenny Pickett. Not Steelers, Pittsburgh quarterback. And Steelers, if he gets drafted there, Kenny Pickett. Obviously, the Steelers losing Ben Roethlisberger last season to retirement. They picked up Mitchell Trubisky, but I don't know if they want him to be the future. Kenny Pickett, a guy who is a Pittsburgh home and grown, and it looks like, to me at least, he will be staying in the black and gold. So that is my official mock draft of the year 2022 for the NFL. I'm probably wrong on most of them. I mean, I would like to think I'm not, but the draft always ceases to amaze me. So even all these guys who make the big bucks, you got people making a bunch of money to make these mock drafts, and they're wrong every single time.
Right.
It's like, wow.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a perfect mock draft because you can't predict what's going to happen. You know, you think you've got the perfect one, and then all of a sudden one trade totally throws everything off, or, you know, something comes up. Like on draft day, we had the gas mask situation a few years ago. We won't go any deeper than that. He's now NFTing, by the way.
I saw that.
But we had that situation that came up like right the night of the draft, and that hurt. Like
15 minutes before the draft.
Right, hurt draft stock. You know, I don't know if something like that where, you know, that activity, we'll put it that way, is legal in some places. I don't know if that would hurt his draft stock as much now, but it did. And, you know, things like that happen. So, yeah, so you just never know. It's hard to predict, and who knows what's going to happen pick by pick.
Yeah, it's just that's the kind of the that's what happens, and that's why all these people.
That's why it's fun to watch. I mean, the NFL draft, the NFL has done just such a tremendous job of making the draft an event.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it didn't used to be that way. I mean, it used to be kind of one of those things where it was a novelty item, and, you know, people got mad at Mel Kiper. But now, I mean, things are actually, I mean, this is a big event that they bid cities for. Obviously, it's in Las Vegas this year. And you know, it's been in Nashville. It's been in New York. It's been different cities across the country. And, you know, places actually have lucrative bids to host the NFL draft now. So the NFL's made this just such a big thing. And, you know, certainly there's other activities that go on based around the draft. And it's pretty cool. So people have draft parties. You know, people go watch the draft. They pick up tickets, go out there and see the draft. And, you know, the cities spend big money on how it's going to be staged. And just it's really kind of cool to see how it's changed just in this time that I've been watching football. And that's been probably since the early 80s. It's really interesting to see how the draft has changed. There's no other sport. I think the NBA lottery is interesting, certainly. But once you get past that, you know, it's kind of not as interesting. And certainly once you get to the second round of the NBA draft, you know, people don't really watch the second round as much. You do, because you're a you follow the NBA religiously. But a lot of people who are casuals will watch the lottery, and that's it. Talk about the NHL. I mean, I couldn't even tell you when the NHL draft is.
Oh, I have no
Major
idea.
Major League Baseball is like 9, 10, 12, 50 rounds. I don't know. It's hard to understand. You know, a lot of the prospects will not play in the major leagues, in the Major League Baseball. A lot of the prospects that are drafted tonight and tomorrow and Saturday won't play in the NFL. You know, that's just the way it is. There are only so many slots, only so many teams.
I would say all the picks tonight will probably play in the NFL at some point.
But yeah, but they may play, but will they stay? And that's always the big thing, too. Yeah. You get those great first – well, not great. That's the wrong term. The first-round busts every year. And you know who they are. No need to embarrass them more. You just hope that you don't swing and miss on your first-round draft, because if you do – that sets your franchise back, especially if you're, you know, maybe not if you're late in the first round. Sometimes those swing and misses don't hurt you as much because you had a successful season. You probably have a pretty good team. But if you're number one and you swing and miss, that's catastrophic for your future. So we've seen that in the NFL many, 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 many times. So there we go. Luke Flincham must be listening because he says the NHL draft is in July 7th and 8th. So thank you, Luke Flincham, our hockey correspondent emeritus, still listening. I couldn't tell you when the NHL draft is. He just told us July 7, 8. So thank you, Luke Flincham.
Well, now you know. Hey, there we go.
Yeah. Luke's the man. Hope you're doing well, Luke.
But, yeah, all drafts in major sports are exciting, but the NFL draft is kind of the...
He says I am.
The top of the notch, you could say. So... it's going to be interesting. Obviously, I'm probably going to get I would say my over-under on my 20-person mock draft. I'm going to say I'm going to get 8.
Now, Owen Pulley, who has been designated for assignment today, because he's not here, he said he's doing a 7-round mock draft himself. So that'll be interesting to see what he comes up with.
Yes, the 7-round mock draft. That is just...
maybe that's why he's not here.
That's why he's not here. Yeah. He's just doing a mock draft, nonstop, grinding to get that out.
He's going to town with the mock draft.
But, yeah, besides the NFL draft, there's other stuff happening this weekend. And there's a certain IndyCar race.
Honda Grand Prix of Alabama down in Birmingham. And, you know, Robin Miller, the late great Robin Miller, said that other than Alabama football, Talladega in a NASCAR race, the Honda Grand Prix of Alabama is probably the third biggest sporting event in the state as far as interest goes. And we just saw before we started the show, Saturday is now sold out. So the weekend is officially sold out at the Honda Grand Prix of Alabama, which is excellent news for IndyCar down there at Barber Motorsports Park. So that's coming up this weekend,
and that's going to be an interesting one. Obviously lots of events happening down there, and IndyCar really is going to be back really on the full schedule as
it's been 3 long weeks since they raced at Long Beach. So this week they're obviously back on track in Alabama at Barber Motorsports Park, which is a track that oddly was built for motorcycle racing.
Really?
But it has become a really good track for IndyCar.
Hey, well, there we go.
But of course, if we're handicapping the field here, with obviously this week, or maybe it was last week, Peretta Motorsport announced that they will run some races later in the season. They're not running this particular race. So Alex Palou has been very strong at Alabama at Barber the first few times that he's run there. So Chip Ganassi and the Hondas will probably be definitely out in force. And, of course, the team that's really dominated IndyCar this year, at least up front, has been
Penske.
Team Penske, who's back after kind of a season last year where Joseph Newgarden had a really good year, but Will Power was uncharacteristically off most of the year. Had a couple of shots at win. One was in Alabama, but had some misfortune late. And Scotty Mack, who was really nowhere last year, but he has clearly come out this offseason.
He has arisen.
Yes, and the three car is back in a big way. So when you look at that, Rahal Letterman, also Graham Rahal, and they're still trying to get their program going with Christian Lundgaard, Jack Harvey. Others this week to watch out for, you know, the Meyer Shank guys, I think, are starting to put it together with Simon Pagenaud. The Elio Castroneves car has been a little bit of a struggle this year. Can't figure out quite why that's not working, but we know Elio will be strong over at Indy. You've got Connor Daly and Rinus VK for Ed Carpenter this coming up this week. Dryan Reinbold's not racing. They're the Dale Coyne team. You know, Takuma Sato's had a pretty good year so far in the Dale Coyne number 51. David Malukas, the rookie, highly touted, struggling just a bit, but you expect that out of a rookie. Marcus Ericsson, Scott Dixon, Alex Palou, and Jimmy Johnson. What will Jimmy Johnson do? This is now his second race at Alabama. Will he be a little bit more successful than he was last time? Still waiting for Arrow McLaren SP to kind of step forward. Pato and Felix Rosenquist. Of course, they get Juan Pablo Montoya next month at IMS, and he'll be a threat to win the Indy 500 because he always is. And we were looking up his record. Other than, what, that 33rd place finish, he's been in the top 10 every time he's run at IMS. Colton Herta, obviously, a guy who can always win. Alexander Rossi, still trying to figure out his way there. I don't look for him to be at Andretti once his contract is up. Romain Grosjean in the 28 car, and Devlin DeFrancesco for Andretti. That is their team. Of course, probably if you pick a driver out of that, it would be Colton. And then finally, the AJ Foyt team. Kyle Kirkwood has been extremely impressive this year so far. Really, in that 14 car, he had a top 10 at top 10 at Texas, and then followed it up with another one at Long Beach. So he's definitely having a great year for AJ Foyt. Tatiana Calderon still trying to get her sea legs under her. This will be her last race. Well, I'm not sure if she's running the Indy Road Course in the 11. I know Jarrett Hildebrand is running the Indy 500 in that car. But Dalton Kellett, of course, too, who is probably one of the most fan-friendly drivers in the series. Dalton Kellett also still trying to get going. So probably if you look this week, I'm going to take one of the Ganassi cars. I think that they're probably going to break that string of Penske domination. But I would expect that Penske, those cars, will be up there and will be fighting for a win. But I'm going to take out of the Ganassi. I'm going to take Alex Palou this week to win the race. Now, I haven't been very good so far at picking winners, but I'm going to take Alex Palou. I think you picked Joseph Newgarden, didn't you?
To win this race?
To win
the championship? Yeah.
But didn't you pick him to win Long Beach too?
Yeah, he won.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go on a ledge and say Newgarden will win again.
It's possible.
I have to pick him until he loses.
You know, Joseph's had a great year. And if there's one thing on his resume that he's missing, it's the Indy 500. And at some point, you just figure if he continues to be as dominant as he's been of a driver, he's going to win the Indy 500.
I mean, that's really the only thing that's eluding him from his career.
But, I mean, it's kind of like Elio. The only thing on his resume that he doesn't have is a championship. He's got four Indy 500s. I think probably Joseph Newgarden would trade one of his championships for one of Elio's 500 wins. But Joseph, to be honest, I can't think of a time really when Joseph's like, wow, he was really a threat in this. You know, he's always struggled a little bit at Indy. And certainly the whole Penske team struggled last month. Will Power barely made the race. Scott McLaughlin had a good day going, but I think had a problem late. And Joseph Newgarden wasn't really a factor all month long. So I would expect, as we head into the month of May, and that's a discussion for another day, that's going to change this month, because I think Mr. Penske probably is, you know, that's what he sets. He's kind of like A.J. Foyt. You know, A.J. Foyt could have his cars finish 20th all year, and if his team does well at Indy, they made their year, because that's what he puts his entire year on, is how they do at Indy, and I think a lot of these teams do. So, you know, certainly Roger Penske won the championship the year they didn't make the Indy 500. 1995, they still won the championship that year. But that's like a big stain on his resume still, that they didn't make the Indy 500 that year. And I look for that to change. But, you know, leading out of Alabama will set the month of May. It sets the table for the month of May. And there was some debate, too, I believe, on Twitter about, I think David Land had this on Twitter, one of the probably the best racing YouTubers there is, David Land on YouTube. He said, should the Indy folks move that open test out of April and move it to the first week of May? Because he talked about now how nobody's really paying attention to Barber, although tracks sold out. You know, people are already talking about the month of May, just like we are here. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's a good one. I could definitely see the test being end of May because it'd be warmer,
right?
A little bit,
and they did run into some cool weather and situations.
Obviously, it was a little bit wet on the track a little bit at times. I like that idea. I think at the start of May to make May completely 500. But
yeah, because it used to be that the first Saturday of May was the first day of practice.
Yeah.
Track opened, and that was the first day.
I'd say that. I'd like that.
Right. Of course, a few years back, they changed it so that you only have the 2 weeks of, really, May now.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have the Grand Prix, which starts the month. You know, but the Grand Prix, for lack of a better term, is more just like another race, the way they treat it. But then after that, usually it's on, I believe, Mother's Day, they turn the track around, and by that Monday they're ready to go for 500 practice, and then got the qualifications, and then carb day, and then race day. Now there was also, if we're talking IndyCar here, we're not talking necessarily Alabama, but what came up this week, IndyCar did change their qualifying format for the 500, because it appears that we're not going to have more than 33 cars. Right now we still have 32, although my sources tell me we will have 33 soon. But there's 32 cars right now going for 33 spots. So there's not going to be a lot of bump
there's
day
not
drama.
Be a bump day, yeah.
Right. Like we had last year, we had a little drama on bump day. Obviously, the Top Gun car never really showed the speed necessary to get into the field. But it was still a little drama there at the end for Will Power and some other folks on the last row. About whether they would be in the 500. And, you know, Will Power made that kind of just hair-on-fire run where he brushed the wall in turn two still kept that car going, which was amazing. But the really showed how much, you know, a former Indy champion wanted to make the race, even though he was only facing one person who could knock him out. But that's neither here nor there. The Indy 500... announced this week, the IMS IndyCar announced that they are doing now a fast 12, and then they will go down to a fast 6, where in the past for the pole they've done the fast 9. So they've everybody qualifies on Saturday, and they use that to set positions 10 through what this was in the past, set positions 10 through 33, and then the top 9 then would run on Sunday in a shootout for the pole, where everybody got one shot guaranteed to try to set a new pole speed and be on the pole for the Indianapolis 500. What they're doing this year is they're doing the same thing. Everybody qualifies on Saturday, positions 1 through 32, or 33 if we get it. Thank goodness. I mean, hope we do. I really do, because that'll be the story. Mm-hmm. But that will then lock in positions number, what would it be, 13 through 33 would be locked in. Then the top 12 now would go, and they would have a shootout. Each would get a guaranteed shot to get into the Fast Six. After that, clear the board for the Fast Six, and those six cars then would get a chance, a guaranteed shot, to be on the pole for the Indy 500. Now, here's my point, right? Let's go back to the old days. If you were fast on Saturday and you ran four hot laps on pole day, you were locked in the field. Unless all 33 cars went faster than you, you were locked in the field on the pole at the Indy 500. Okay? You only had to run four laps. So now to get on the pole at Indianapolis, you're going to have to run four laps on Saturday, four laps in the Fast 12, and four laps in the Fast 6. So in reality, we now have 12 laps of qualifying for you to win the pole. Now, for excitement purposes, that does make it more exciting. You know, you're going to see a lot of fast laps. You're going to see a lot of hot laps. You're going to see a lot of intrigue and fun. But let's say you're Takuma Sato, right? And you get in there and you somehow make it in the Fast Six. Do you risk your car to go for the pole? Or do you sit on your Fast Six time? You know, Can you do that? I don't know if that's even possible. Because what they've done, and if you go back, 2017, there's a horrifying qualifying accident where Sebastian Bourdais was running in the 230s, came out of turn two, something happened to the car, and he went nearly head-on into the wall. And, thank goodness for IndyCar safety. Mm-hmm. Really, thank goodness. Because the car was broken. He was broken. Had several broken bones, but Seb is still around to talk about it. But it's also the reason why Sebastian Bourdais does not like oval racing. He's talked about that. He talked about how tough it was and his mental health to get back in that race car. So it's all fun and games, and these guys are really good. Guys and gals are really good at having the memory of a goldfish when it comes to hitting the wall. You know, it's like you get back in and you go. And I don't know how they do it. I really don't. But From a IndyCar perspective, right, if I'm Roger Penske, if I'm Jay Fry, if I'm Mark Miles, if I'm J. Douglas Bowles, I'm now putting my best cars for the 500. I'm now putting them out there for 12 laps of qualifying on the edge with the boost up, going 230 nearly miles an hour, 240 miles down the straightaways. Is it worth it just for that excitement factor? I don't know. You're the fan that's going to go watch qualifying. Mm-hmm. Is it worth it to have Elio Castroneves out there having to qualify three times just to get a pole spot? Whereas, 13th spot is not a bad spot to start the race, unless you have triskaidekaphobia. It's not that bad of a spot to start the race. Mm-hmm. So if you're, let's say, Santino Ferrucci, right? And you start 13th. You've only run four laps to make the race. So you're still going to get a good starting spot, but you've only run four laps. I just don't know. I think that's asking a lot out of those top teams.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the thing. And maybe next year, let's say we get 36 drivers, maybe they change it back. But they wanted to make it more exciting because obviously we don't have bump day anymore.
Right.
And in all reality, it's all about money and draw. And without bump day,
and NBC.
Do you get that? Well, of course. But do you get the same draw without bump day? Probably, but maybe. So that they've made changes. I don't think it's permanent. I doubt it, but we will have to see. But let's just see.
I just hate, people a lot this week. They've been talking about the balloon controversy, too. They're not doing the balloon release. And that's something that, if you're an IndyCar traditionalist, if you're a 500 fan, you may miss. You may miss that tradition. you know, on WBDG FM HD1 Indianapolis. You may miss that tradition of the balloons going up. But all in all, the balloons float for about, you see them for about, what, 2 or 3 minutes as they float away?
Yeah, you see them for about 10 minutes.
You know, yeah, and they're gone. And what they've done now is they've added a second flyover. And I also think that they can still have a balloon release. They have these beautiful screens now that they could do a virtual balloon release, you know, have balloons go up the pylon. You know, they can do so many things now with these beautiful screens that Roger Penske has put in out there that have really improved the racing fans' experience at IMS. They can do so many things. But people have been, like, zoned in on this balloon controversy. And really, the thing is, how are we going to get more than 32 cars at IMS when there are, according to Roger Penske, 65 IndyCar chassis out there that are usable?
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense.
You know, you got to get another engine provider. I think that's one thing. You know, if Chevy and Honda aren't willing to provide more than 33 engine leases, you got to find somebody else. You know, I don't know who it would be, but you got to find Porsche, or you got to find, you know, there have been a number of speculated possible manufacturers who might be interested in making an IndyCar engine. You got to go out and you got to find somebody who's going to give you what the fans want. And they want that drama. There was nothing, I mean, the drama of Juncos Racing versus Arrow McLaren a few years back, that was drama. You know, when James Hinchcliffe missed the race, that was drama.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's where the drama is. We don't need manufactured drama for the pole to give us that drama. We know those guys are going to make the race. You're in the top, you're in the first four rows, you're not only going to make the race, you have a chance to win the race. But the drama is that small budget team versus Team Penske, yeah, you know, in 1995, or Eddie Cheever sitting there on the wall just watching people. Billy Boat did it. I mean, you know, the gun in the air at 6 o'clock. Well, now it's 5:50. The gun in the air at 5:50 when that last car is the last car going to roll out with that chance to make the race. That's the drama. It's not at the front of the field because, man, we know Scott Dixon's going to be in the Fast 12. You know, we know Elio's probably going to be up there. We know you could probably, on your hands, you know, Ed Carpenter is going to be in
there.
The Fast 12.
He'll be there.
Yeah, I know Ed Carpenter runs, what now, one race a year. You know Ed Carpenter. Well, I guess he ran Texas, but you know Ed Carpenter is going to be in that Fast 12. You know it. You know Colton Herta is probably going to, some of the Andretti's are going to be there. We could probably predict who that Fast 12 is going to be. And will it matter whether Scott Dixon starts in the front row or the fourth row? Scott Dixon's going to be somewhere up front. If his car doesn't crash or he doesn't have a mechanical failure, Scott Dixon will be in the mix at the end. He may not win the race. Certainly, it's tough to win this race. But he'll be in the top five, top ten, somewhere. That's not where the drama is.
It's in the back.
It's in. And so I don't know that the current IndyCar leadership has that same mentality. And I think race fans do. And I think that there's a disconnect there. And there's a lot of great things going on in IndyCar right now. I mean, that field is deep. We could list probably 20 people who have a legitimate shot at winning the race. 20 people, maybe more, who have a legitimate shot this year of winning the Indy 500. Even, you know, we talked about him a couple times. Takuma Sato, running for Dale Coyne. Takuma Sato knows how to get around that place.
He's a two-time winner.
Two-time winner, and in the last few years, the only time that he's been out of it, either his car broke or he got broke. You know, somebody took him out. But, or, he, you know, sometimes Takuma's aggressive. But the point is that there are a bunch of guys that have a chance to win that race. So there's a lot of positive things right now about IndyCar, and I don't want to beat on IndyCar because just motorsports in general is kind of having a renaissance with F1. and NASCAR's ratings are just through the roof, which I don't understand, but NASCAR's ratings are really good right now, and IndyCar's ratings are way up, and, you know, F1 is doing great things. You know, they're expanding races into the United States. They're trying to get an American team in F1, but man, you got to solve this because Indy is still the crown jewel. And if you can't get more than 33 cars to enter the crown jewel of racing, your purse must be too low. You got to raise that purse. You got to get more sponsorships. You got to have the Gainbridge Indy 500 or whatever. I know there's resistance to that, but if you don't raise that purse for 33rd, you're not going to have people that want to take a flyer on that. Because if it doesn't pay your expenses, why is Chip Ganassi going to roll out a 33rd car? Mm-hmm. You know, but if that suddenly that 33rd spot pays $400,000 or more, maybe they start rolling out. Maybe you guarantee $500,000 if you entered the 500. I mean, that might be an enticement for somebody who's sitting on the sidelines not to run. So I don't know. I think IndyCar has to solve that. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're going to have a great Indy 500. It's going to be a great, that's the one thing. It doesn't matter if it's 33 people showing up or 45 people showing up. You're going to have a great Indy 500 because that's what it is. It's really impossible. Even the bad 500s are great.
Oh yeah. And I mean, it's going to be a packed house. I mean,
the health of the race is the support days, the practice days, and the race to make the race. That is the month of May. It's the race to get to the race, which is going to be great. But do you have things for the fans to go watch? I mean, gosh, we're going to watch right now. All these cars are going to be running race setups because there's no reason to run a qualifying setup.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're, you know, a car you think has a chance to make the pole. And there are some teams that won't have a chance and they won't even try. You know, they'll just run four solid laps, get in the field. If you've got one chassis, right? If you're one of those teams that has one chassis, are you going to risk the pole? Are you going to risk going for the pole?
No, they just sit back.
When you know you're guaranteed to make the race?
Mm-hmm.
You're just going to run four good laps, get it in the field, and
there's no more.
Don't worry about it.
No competition.
Go run on carb day. So, I don't know. That was a rant, but I just think that IMS needs to do something. IndyCar needs to do something to make sure that they have more than 33 showing up, or just get rid of. I mean, just say, oh, we're just going to guarantee entries for 33 people. You know, we're not going to have any more. At least lean into it then.
Yeah.
Which would be sad, but hey, the sponsors would be happy.
That is true. But we will see. We will see. Got more time, maybe. We'll see.
Right.
Hopefully it's 33, and then we'll go from there. But our last topic of the show, we're just going to go over, skim over it, and talk more about it this Tuesday. But the NBA, there's some games going on. They had two games going on last night. The Bulls lost to the Bucks in Game 5. The Milwaukee advances to play Boston in the second round of the NBA playoffs. That game was 116-100. The Warriors eliminated the Nuggets in a stellar of a game. This was a really good one. I watched this one to the end. The Warriors won 102-98 and beat the Nuggets in 5 as well. Last Tuesday, the Suns beat the Pelicans to advance to a 3-2 lead, 112-97. And then the Grizzlies beat the Timberwolves on a great game-winning shot by Ja Morant, 111-109. And then Miami beat Atlanta to beat them in 5 games as well. Victor Oladipo was the star of the show for Miami as he got his first start in a long time. He had 23 points and 3 assists. Tonight, there's some good games going on. 76ers versus Raptors, the story of this one. The Sixers led 3-0 in this series, and it's now a 3-2 series. The Raptors looking to take it to Game 7 if they win that one. And then the Pelicans take on the Suns to hopefully advance to a Game 7 as well. If Phoenix wins, they will go on to the second round. And Devin Booker looking likely to play, even though originally he was ruled out for the remainder of the series.
Yeah, they're kind of rushing him back, I think.
I think they're scared.
Yeah.
The Pelicans have been playing well. Maybe if they had a guy named Zion Williamson, I don't know.
Something like that.
Maybe they'd be really good, but we'll have to see what they do next season with him. And then the Mavericks take on the Jazz. The Mavericks looking to close out Utah tonight in Utah. So it will be an interesting one there as well. And then tomorrow, some more games happening. Then this weekend, if the games that are 3-2 go to game sevens, will happen this weekend. And then Tuesday, we'll be talking about round two of the NBA playoffs. And we'll be talking about the whole NFL draft breakdown and more. What happened at the IndyCar race this weekend as well. I mean, this Tuesday is going to be a stacked show.
Yeah. And they have been lately.
And so,
of course, tonight, Ben Davis softball.
Yeah.
Giants taking on Brownsburg, and
I'll be there.
You'll call the game.
So,
special guest with you.
My mother.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
she's going to be there, and
Jess Audie Rash
is with you as well.
So, it's going to be a good one as well. It's a high school baseball, softball, not baseball.
Right.
So, weather's warming up a little bit, so it should be a good game tonight as well.
But yeah.
That's basically going to be it. Maybe Ohm will be back Tuesday if he's done with his seven-round mock draft.
Yeah.
We will see if he's done by then.
He'll be pitching for the Iowa Cubs, maybe.
Yeah.
He's been designated for assignment again.
You never know with Owen.
Yeah.
But maybe he'll be back. We'll see. But thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Until then, goodbye.